You are listening to the Forgotten News Podcast.
But before we begin, here are a few words about a couple of other podcasts that we think you might want to try.
It's Saturday night in the city by the bay. The rain slicks the streets until they're the only thing that's clean in this rotten burg. And I'm here, alone, late night whiskey burning a hole in my... Damn it. Why has a man gotta be alone in a place like this?
What if you didn't have to be?
What if you had friends?
What?
Friends like us.
Because you can, kinda.
But how?
By listening to our podcast.
It's just like we were here, with you, right now.
Talking about everything you wish we talked to you about.
Wouldn't that be fun?
After all, we're the friends you wish you had.
It's perfect. What's the name of your podcast?
Logical Lunatics.
Hey, this is Steve from Great Lakes True Crime. We tell stories from Ohio and the rest of the Lower Great Lakes region. Give us a listen on your favorite podcast app and follow us on Twitter or Facebook. Just search for Great Lakes True Crime.
Welcome to the Forgotten News Podcast. This is your window to hear true stories from long ago. Stories that once made headlines. Stories that people thought would be unforgettable. Yet those stories were soon lost in the sands of time or were buried deep in the dustbin of history. In this podcast, we shake off the sand and dust from those stories and share them here with you, as fresh as the day they were first told.
And now, here's your hosts.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome to episode 43 of the Forgotten News Podcast.
This is Jim.
This is Jessica.
And listeners, guess what? I didn't expect to be here today, but here I am. And here is the story behind the story. First, in case you don't already know, this episode marks the third anniversary of the Forgotten News Podcast.
Yes!
Listeners, we hope that you are just as excited about that as we are.
Woo!
High fives, champagne, celebrations all around. Listeners, this episode was originally scheduled to be released on July 17th, which is the actual date of the third anniversary. But, unfortunately, that date needed to be postponed. First, because Jim got sick.
Yeah.
Then, it needed to be pushed back again because Kit had an unexpected emergency with her family. And unfortunately, that emergency resulted in Kit not being able to have enough time or sufficient clear focus to be able to co-host on this episode. So, basically, Jim and Kit asked me if I could substitute as co-host in order to be able to release the episode within July, the anniversary month. Now, how could I possibly turn that down? So, in a nutshell, as I said, here I am. I hope that everyone in the audience is starting to love the sound of my voice. And, by the way, I have now co-hosted two episodes of this podcast. If I co-host this show just one more time, I will have co-hosted more episodes than any previous substitute co-host. Listeners, I am really looking forward to breaking that record. But that is not the only record that we want to tell you about.
Well, just a few days ago, we learned that this show has recently reached a total of over 55,000 downloads in the 3 short years since it was launched in 2017.
55,000. Wow, that's incredible. That is a very large number. If I had a dollar for every download, that would be a lot of dollars.
Personally, I am just blown away because that represents more than 5,000 additional downloads since January when we hit the milestone number of 50,000. Listeners, thank you for that.
Yes, thank you so much.
And with that in mind, we knew that we wanted our featured story on this episode to be a really great story.
In other words, not just some random story.
We originally had planned for a completely different story. But as time went on and we began working on the episode, we decided to change our original story idea. We wanted the featured story to be something that was pertinent to the present day, but that would still be a story from the past, just like all of our previous episodes. So, that is what you are going to hear.
Now, as we mentioned, this episode is being released in July, summertime, and we hope that most of you are enjoying traditional summer activities. In my area where I live in eastern Pennsylvania, we like to go down to the shore, as they call it here, going to the beach, hanging out on the boardwalk, getting beach houses with our friends, which is something that I do every summer. But this year, I have not yet gone to the beach. I am sure that in the coming weeks, I will just be jonesing for a sunburn. So I'm sure I'll make it down sooner or later. But as of now, I'm still hunkered down, socially distancing and washing my hands. Now, unfortunately, we know that a lot of those types of summer activities might not be available this year because of the coronavirus pandemic.
But we have a question for you.
If your community doesn't have a beach, does it have a public swimming pool?
And if it does, is it open? Or has it been shut down this summer because of the pandemic?
We know that some big cities have neighborhood pools, and not just one pool for the whole city.
Now, if you do have a pool that is open this summer, please be safe.
Because we have seen too many photographs and videos of pools and beaches that are literally packed with people who are taking no safety precautions. Then, 2 weeks later, we learn that dozens of those same people are in the hospital suffering or even dying from COVID-19.
So, listeners, please, just be safe.
But hold on. Jim, we don't want to get off track.
No.
We were talking about swimming pools, especially cities or towns that have public swimming pools. And typically, that means that any member of the public can use the pool, although sometimes there is a small admission fee, but usually that is the only restriction.
However, suppose that you were suddenly prohibited from using the pool for a reason that you had no control over.
Or even worse, because you were excluded because they just didn't like you.
Well, that's exactly what happened in the featured story that we are going to tell you on this episode.
An entire group of people were forbidden from using a public swimming pool simply because of the color of the skin that they were born with. Now, unfortunately, this was a common occurrence in the Deep South of the United States prior to the 1970s, but this story did not take place anywhere in the South. It took place in a mid-sized city in the state of Ohio in 1947.
We will be telling you why it happened and how it finally ended.
So, long story short, you are going to be hearing a story about race, hatred, and discrimination. And if that is something that might trigger a negative emotional reaction for you, then you should probably skip this episode. In addition, listeners, we will leave it up to you to decide whether this story is something that children should hear, since it might be too upsetting for young ears.
But, on the other hand, you might think that this story is important for them to hear.
Now, we have one more thing that we want to mention. We are super thrilled about our guest narrator on this episode, because it's going to be
us.
Although, you will hear a few guest voices here and there during our narration.
And finally, with all of that having been said,
on with the show. Listeners, there is an old saying that love makes the world go round. And if that saying is true, then perhaps hate can bring it to a standstill.
It's been tried with some rather tedious frequency during the past several thousand years.
And if the peddlers of hate keep at it, they may eventually make it happen.
Unless, as in the featured story on this episode, justice and truth are able to triumph once more.
Our story begins in the year 1933 in the city of Warren, Ohio. This was then a community of approximately 41,000 people, located about 60 miles or 96 kilometers southeast of Cleveland. And at the time, roughly 5% of those people were Black. Now, in August of that year, 1933, the city council voted to build a swimming pool for the people of the community at a cost of approximately $40,000. This would be the equivalent of $790,000 in the present day. The master plan was to locate the pool directly adjacent to the city park. In addition, the pool would be state-of-the-art with an automatic water filtration system as well as changing rooms and showers. And when you take all of that into account, the truth is the real cost today of constructing this type of swimming pool for a town of this size would probably be more like $1 million or even $2 million.
But the city was not very worried about the cost, because the money for building the pool came entirely from grants and cheap loans from the U.S. government, under the Works Progress Administration, better known as the WPA, which was an agency established under the inspiration of President Franklin D. Roosevelt to create jobs and community improvements so as to help end the widespread poverty and unemployment which had occurred in the United States during the years following the stock market crash in 1929, commonly known as the Great Depression.
In fact, one of the specific reasons which the city council had given for constructing the pool was, quote, as a means of providing work for numerous unemployed citizens of the city of Warren, unquote.
And long story short, the pool was quickly built. Then, in the very next summer, 1934, it was open to the public.
However, here is the most important thing that you need to know in regard to our story. The pool was open to all residents of the city of Warren with no discrimination in regard to race, color, or gender. And that was the way it remained for the next 12 years. In fact, during all of that time period, according to a newspaper article published in 1947, both whites and blacks swam together at the pool, quote, with no clashes or marring incidents, unquote.
But in 1946, before the end of the season, the pool was suddenly closed down, supposedly, quote-unquote, for repairs.
However, what was really going on was that the mayor, Henry Wagner, and various other members of his administration were looking for a way to restrict the swimming pool to white people only. The reason was because Mayor Wagner had gotten complaints from some white people in regard to the fact that black people were allowed to use the pool.
There were also widespread rumors that there were a large number of white people who disliked the fact that black people were allowed to swim in the pool. And so, according to those rumors, they had started going to Niles, Ohio, and other nearby cities to swim in their pools instead. The truth or untruth of these rumors is unknown, and the number of any such complaints is also unknown.
One thing that is known for a fact is that at no point did the mayor ever visit the pool to see the situation himself, so as to determine whether he should even pay any attention to the complaints and rumors. And, in any event, the reaction of Mayor Wagner is surprising, both then and now, because he had run for office on a platform that included a promise to oppose racial discrimination. This promise might have been partly because, over the previous decade, there had been a slow but steady increase in the number of black residents in the city to nearly 9% of the local population.
So, needless to say, after this flip-flop by the mayor, the black community was very angry in regard to the fact that the mayor had caved in to rumors and complaints by a handful of white racists.
Nevertheless, at some point, very early in the controversy, Mayor Wagner asked the city law director for a legal opinion. And, according to the mayor,
under the laws of Ohio, there was no way we could open the pool with discrimination. There was no way to open it unless you opened it to all citizens.
It was 100% illegal for the city government to restrict the swimming pool to white people.
In fact, the laws of the state of Ohio had specifically prohibited racial discrimination in all public facilities since 1884.
So the mayor decided to look for another way.
He first attempted to negotiate a deal with the leaders of the largest organization of black people in the city of Warren, the NAACP. The mayor proposed an agreement whereby the pool would be made available for the exclusive use of black people on one day of each week. This offer was flatly rejected by the Warren NAACP.
It was at this point that a very curious chain of events began to happen. Specifically, on July 16, 1946, the City Council of Warren enacted an emergency ordinance authorizing the Director of Public Works to lease the pool for the swimming season of 1947. And then, pursuant to this ordinance, the pool was quickly leased to an organization called the Veterans Swim Club.
This was a private nonprofit corporation, evidently created for the sole purpose of taking over the operation of the swimming pool. In fact, not only was this organization formed in 1947, but its constitution was adopted on June 3rd of that year, only 3 days before it was given the lease by the city.
The mayor and city council justified the leasing of the pool because supposedly the pool was losing money. Yet, the city of Warren did not require any payment from the Veterans Swim Club in return for being given the lease. Instead, the club was simply required to pay a rental fee that was equal to 10% of the gross receipts from the operation of the pool.
But if the swimming pool was, allegedly, not making any money, this financial arrangement made no sense, since the city would not be receiving any income from the lease. In fact, the city would actually be losing money, because the lease further provided that the city would be responsible for the cost of all repairs and maintenance.
Now, let's talk about the Veterans Swim Club. The group was headed by an executive committee of 3 men who were unelected and self-appointed. The constitution of this club specifically declared that any person could join who was a U.S. military veteran or a family member or relative of a veteran. And if you joined the club, you and your family were then authorized to use the pool. However, in reality, the Veterans Swim Club excluded any person who was not white.
The organization ultimately had nearly 5,000 members, all of whom were white. In fact, you could not even get a membership application unless you were white. But the mayor and the city council repeatedly ignored complaints from the black community in regard to this situation.
And, as a result, on July 24, 1947, the Warren NAACP filed a suit against the mayor and the Veterans Swim Club for a court order against, quote, this outrageous and blatant racial discrimination, unquote, which prevented black people from being able to use the pool, and also to have the lease declared null and void as being contrary to the Constitution and laws of the United States and the state of Ohio. And further, that the lease arrangement as to the use of the Warren swimming pool was arbitrarily and maliciously intended to illegally exclude the black citizens of Warren from use of the pool solely on the basis of race and color.
The plaintiffs in the case were James Culver, a black man who had served in the military as a bomber pilot in World War II, and Effie Hayden, the secretary of the Warren NAACP. Hence, the suit was titled Culver et al. Versus the City of Warren.
The case first went to the Court of Common Pleas of Trumbull County, which held several days of hearings in a courtroom that was packed with spectators, both white and black. However, the judge took a very narrow view of the issues and ruled that the city had the right to make a contract or lease with any person or organization, including an association that restricted its membership to white people.
The court also ruled that there was nothing illegal about the lease, since its stated purpose was simply to prevent a financial loss to the city. The Warren NAACP almost immediately appealed this decision to the District Court of Appeals, where the case was heard by a three-judge panel.
The appeals court rejected the decision of the lower court that the mayor and city council has acted solely out of financial concern for the possible loss of income from the expense of continuing to operate the pool. Instead, the appeals court declared that the entire chain of events was crystal clear. The real purpose of the lease to the Veterans Swim Club was to exclude the black people of Warren from use of the pool, notwithstanding that the pool was constructed and operated by public tax money provided by the United States government and the city of Warren, and that those taxes were paid by all citizens, both white and black.
The court further ruled that the actions of Mayor Wagner and the other city officials were a violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, as well as the Bill of Rights of the Ohio Constitution. In addition, the court ruled, in this context, that the Veterans Swim Club was simply an agent that was used by the city to attempt to hide and disguise its unconstitutional and unlawful discrimination against the black people of Warren.
In addition, in regard to the alleged worry by city officials that the city might suffer a financial loss if the pool was desegregated, the court stated,
"If this is the price that must be paid for constitutional guarantees, the price is indeed small enough. It is one thing to pay lip service to the Constitution, and another thing to abide by its specific provisions."
The court then observed that the city did not seem to have any financial concerns in regard to whether the parks, playgrounds, or other recreational facilities were operating at a loss. Nope, only the pool. And so, for all of these reasons, the Court of Appeals ruled that the swimming pool would thereafter be required to open to all citizens of all races on an equal basis. The city then appealed this ruling to the Ohio Supreme Court, which refused to hear the case, and thereby implicitly affirmed the decision of the appeals court.
Now, keep in mind, this ruling occurred in 1948, and from all accounts, during the decades that followed, the swimming pool was thereafter used by both blacks and whites, with no friction of any kind.
But, unfortunately, this was not the case elsewhere.
In fact, throughout the majority of the 20th century, there were many cities and towns in the United States where black people were violently attacked for simply attempting to use a public swimming pool.
The most famous incident occurred on June 18, 1964, when a mixed group of white and black people entered and jumped into a pool in St. Augustine, Florida, that was restricted to whites only. The manager of the pool became so enraged that he ran to the edge of the pool and poured 2 gallons of muriatic acid pool cleaner onto the black swimmers and into the water surrounding them.
The members of the group were arrested shortly thereafter, but their protest had the intended effect. The incident became national and international news because reporters had been tipped off about the plan to desegregate the pool.
And long story short, there was widespread outrage across the United States, including by President Lyndon Johnson, who worried that it could undermine respect for the United States throughout the world.
Our whole foreign policy will go to hell over this.
In fact, the incident created such a huge and immediate political firestorm that within 24 hours, the civil rights bill that had been introduced a year before and had been stalled in the Senate was passed and signed into law as the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which strictly prohibits racial discrimination in any public facilities or accommodations.
Specifically, including swimming pools. And with that final bit of information, we are now at the end of our story. Listeners, now that you've heard that story, I guess we can say black swimmers matter. Well, they absolutely mattered in getting the Civil Rights Act passed in 1964. However, in the present day, even though we now have laws on the books that guarantee equal rights for blacks and whites, including equal rights to enter and use swimming pools and any other public place, the reality is black people are often harassed, discriminated against, threatened, arrested, or even killed for doing ordinary things that white people are usually able to do with no issue whatsoever.
Seriously, there is no question about it. You see it happening nearly every day. On TV, or in the newspaper, or on the internet. So, listeners, just think about that. It's important.
Now, with that being said, let's move on. We would like to thank the guest voices on our featured story. Please take a bow and tell our listeners anything you would like them to know about you.
Hi, my name is Lex Zorn. I'm based in Carmel, Indiana, USA. I'm a very prolific and experienced voice actor. I've voiced more than 100 features, shorts, web series, audio dramas, documentaries, commercials, and video games. And I'm always looking for my next adventure. So if I can ever help with any of your projects, I can be reached at lexzorn@gmail.com. That's LECZORN @gmail.com. Or call me or text me at area code 818-699-4455. Thank you, and I hope to work with you in the near future.
Hi, Chris Roberts here, inviting you to listen to I Saw It on Linden Street, our weekly podcast dedicated to the joy of finding an appreciation in cult films, exploitation oddities, beloved classics, and all points in between. Join us for an informative deep dive into a film that we feel needs to be recognized, with background thrown in on actors, directors, and hey, if I'm doing my job right, you'll get a funny story out of me. So, join us here at I Saw It on Linden Street and listen today. Remember, folks, life's too short not to live in the past. Take it easy.
Hi, this is Jerry Kokich. I'm a voice actor, and I'm always working on my craft. I've done a little bit of everything, and sometimes I forget which is my real voice because, yep, sometimes I'm one voice and sometimes I'm another. You know, I can't even remember how old I am sometimes. If you be wanting to contact me, my email address is jerrykokich@yahoo.com. Y'all take care of yourselves now.
Thanks again.
Yes. Thanks, everyone. And moving right along, listeners, we will now present the latest installment of our regular segment, Police Blotter and Court News, in which we bring you stories of small-time crooks and other random folks who, for one reason or another, ended up in the jaws of the justice system a century or more ago. And this particular segment will be narrated for you exactly as it was published in the Cleveland Plain Dealer on August 8, 1886. However, before we begin, we will mention three quick things. First, in regard to money. Anytime that you hear any amount of money described in this segment, please take note that $1 in 1886 is the equivalent of approximately $25 in the present day.
So, if the amount of a fine or anything else seems low to you, it isn't.
Second, we will now give a short warning to listeners before we begin the segment. Please be aware that in the Police Blotter and Court News segment on this episode, there will be brief mentions of violence, theft, and various alleged crimes by women and juveniles.
So, listeners, if you think that any of those topics might trigger a negative emotional response, then you probably should skip ahead to about 7 minutes from now, give or take a few minutes, and it will all be over.
Now, at this point, before we begin, we will mention one more thing. On the previous episode, in the Police Blotter segment, we discussed a young woman named Honora Sullivan, who was accused of various crimes in 1859. Now, in the 1886 Police Blotter segment, on this episode, which you are about to hear, there is an accused woman named Honora Sullivan. We believe that this is just a strange coincidence and that she is not the same person.
But who knows?
And with all of that having been said,
here we go.
Police Blotter and Court News.
Order in the court. Order in the court.
Municipal Court, Cleveland, Ohio, August 8th, 1886. Ella Kincaid, of 22 Julius Street, and Gussie Franz, of 123 Woodland Avenue, were arrested and charged with disorderly conduct while inside a Chinese laundry. The charges were dismissed, inasmuch as the girls were only gossiping and nothing else. The judge ruled that this was insufficient for them to be found guilty. Patrick Rivers, a sailor from Bradford, Pennsylvania, was arrested upon suspicion of stealing a coat and vest from Fred Minzer. The charges against him were also discharged, as there was no evidence to convict him. Jenny Flaherty of 1238 Forest Street was charged with calling John Hare, a colored man, numerous vile and profane names. She was convicted and ordered to pay court costs with fine waived. Honora Sullivan of 807 Lake Street was charged with assaulting her husband with a knife. The charge was dismissed by the prosecutor. John Smith, alias George Brew, of 18 Lodge Street, who says he is an iron molder, will be given a hearing August 14th on the charge of being a suspicious person. August L. William Powers, a homeless painter, will be tried on the same charge, also on the 14th. Joseph Yargo and George Capel were charged with creating a public disturbance for having indulged in a fight on Sawyer Street. Each of the pugilists were fined the sum of $5 and court costs. A boy with the uncommon and mysterious name of Jones, who lives on Phillips Street, was charged with petty larceny for stealing green apples from Mr. Morgan's orchard. He was fined $1 and court costs.
I hereby declare this court is adjourned.
And that brings us to the end of the Police Blotter and Court News segment for this episode. We hope you enjoyed this brief visit to the dim and dusty cobblestone streets of the past. It is a visit that you are very unlikely to experience anywhere else.
And listeners, we would very much like to be able to tell police blotter stories from the 19th century newspapers of your city or town. So, if you have the time and ability, just send it to us by email. The address is forgottennewspodcast@gmail.com.
Now, listeners, moving on. We would like to express our deepest thanks to our excellent guest narrator and other voices on the Police Blotter segment. Please take a bow and tell our listeners a little about yourselves.
Hi, this is Amelia from Pitney and Amelia's Bitchin' Boutique. If you enjoy eavesdropping on the odd conversations of strangers in public, we might just be the podcast for you. Fresh chit-chat every other Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Stephanie Drabble from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, an avid listener to all podcasts.
Sam Culper of Breakers Podcast.
And once more, thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks again.
Now, if you are a regular listener to this podcast, then you will know that at this point, we would normally move on to our recommendations and advice segment. But instead, on this episode, we will be sharing a few greetings that were sent to us by other podcasters in commemoration of our third anniversary.
Hey friends, it's Nina from Already Gone. Cheers to your 3-year anniversary. That is quite a milestone. We are looking forward to more great content from you in the future. Again, congratulations. Well done.
Hello everyone, this is Robin Warder, host of the True Crime Podcast, The Trail Went Cold, and I'm here to wish Jim and Kit a huge congratulations for their third anniversary of the Forgotten News Podcast. I actually remember when they first started this podcast 3 years ago, and Jim asked if I would be willing to record myself reading out some lines for the debut episode. The experience was a lot of fun, and if you listen carefully, you can hear my voice making a cameo in a couple of more episodes which have come out since then. So once again, a big congrats for 3 years of the Forgotten News Podcast, and I hope that you're around for many more.
It's Charlie from Crime Lines here. I just want to say congratulations to Jim and Kit on 3 years of podcasting. I know firsthand how much work goes into producing a show like the Forgotten News Podcast, and making it 3 years is no small feat. So congratulations. I'm glad I've been able to participate in the show, lending my voice to the first episode, getting to talk to Jim online about old cases that he finds in the newspaper archives, because let me tell you, Jim can find any case anywhere that you've never heard of. So just wanted to say best wishes to you guys. I can't wait to see what happens in the next year.
Hi, Jim and Kit. This is Minna. I wanted to say congratulations on the third anniversary of your show, the Forgotten News Podcast. You've come such a long way and improved so much over the years. You've been a huge support and very kind to me as well, and I'm forever grateful for that. I can't wait to see what you come up with next.
Hey guys, this is Kate from the Ignorance Was Bliss podcast. Congratulations on 3 years. Holy cow. Your listeners may not know that you guys provided me with basically my first sort of break in the podcasting world. I had released one episode, and you put out a call for stories to go with the Valentine's episode in 2018, and I was so intimidated and overwhelmed by the whole process, but I decided I have the mic, I have the software. Let's do the thing. They'll tell me if it's terrible. They'll fire me. Whatever. It'll be fine. I totally deserve it. I'm terrible. Listen to my voice. Blah. Panic, flail, you know. And then I had so much fun researching the story and recorded it with my husband because I wasn't brave enough to sit alone in front of the mic yet at that point. And it just really, like, that's a major role that you guys play in my podcasting history. You were my first sort of guest spot, and I look up to you guys and appreciate what you do and how you do it so much. So please continue doing what you do. I admire you and applaud your efforts, and am looking forward to many more years of Forgotten News.
This is Amelia from Pitney and Amelia's Bitchin' Boutique, and Pitney and I would like to congratulate Jim and Kit on 3 years of one of the most unique and unusual podcasts around. Here's to many more years of the Forgotten News.
Hi, Jim and Kit.
This is Leany, and that's Bunny from the Talk Spooky to Me podcast.
We just wanted to say congratulations on your third anniversary at the Forgotten News podcast.
You absolute corkers. Well done.
Yeah, congratulations. It's hard doing this for a long time, and we are big fans of yours.
Yeah, we bloody love you. And many happy returns.
And beyond!
Aha!
Bye!
Bye!
Hey, this is Julie from 19 Nocturne Boulevard, which is returning this October after such a long hiatus, just so you know. And I still couldn't forget your Forgotten News podcast anniversary. 3 years, isn't it? Or the third anniversary. So, hey, congratulations, Jim and Kit.
Hey, Jim and Kit, it is Moxie from Your Brain on Facts, wishing you a heartfelt congratulations on the third anniversary of your podcast. 3 years is a long time to do something. It's in fact longer than the lifespan of entire countries. In fact, the run of your podcast so far has lasted longer than the countries of Tanganyika, the Provisional Government of Hawaii, the Kingdom of Lithuania, the Republic of Formosa, the country of Azawad, the Democratic Republic of Yemen, the Republic of Crimea, which existed for only a day between declaring its independence and being annexed by Russia, and of course your show has lasted a lot longer than the Sultanate of Zanzibar, which only existed for about 8 minutes. So keep up the good work, and let's see how many other countries you can outlast. If your listeners want to hear more things they never knew, they can check me out on Your Brain on Facts on the same podcast app they're listening to your fine show on.
Well, speaking for myself, it's just incredibly humbling to hear those greetings from some of the greatest podcasters literally on Earth. I don't know if you can hear it in my voice. I'm having trouble even putting my words together. My heart is just bursting with emotion. I don't even know what to say, except thank you. It means so much to me, to Kit, to Jessica. I just don't even have words. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
We love all of you. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Now, speaking of love, our anniversary gift to you, our listeners, is that we are not going to ask you to leave an iTunes review or to make a financial contribution. We aren't even going to ask you to buy a t-shirt or go to our Patreon page.
So, that's it.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Hey, before we go, do you have any final thoughts about the episode or anything else?
In regards to this episode, I will say that as a country, I feel we have a long way to go. But I am very grateful that I was able to be here for the third anniversary show, and I look forward to being a part of many more in the future. Thank you so much, Jim and Kit, for having me.
It was a pleasure. And listeners, by the way, we are pretty sure that Kit Caron will be back with us for the next episode.
But if she isn't, then you'll be able to enjoy my voice once again. I'm sorry, and you're welcome.
And on that note, goodbye, everyone.
Please wear a mask, wash your hands, stay 6 feet away from, oh gosh, everybody.
Stay safe, and you'll stay alive.
Hey, one more thing. We would like to thank everyone who has ever been a guest narrator or a guest voice on this show during the past 3 years.
Podcasters, voice artists, everyone.
And as for our listeners, we just want to say, thank you, God.
Definitely.
And remember, it's the third anniversary of this podcast. So go eat some cake and ice cream. You earned it.
Ha ha ha, happy anniversary. Ha ha ha, happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. Ha ha ha, happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. I wish to you happy, happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. This special day, I'm happy with you. Let's celebrate a happy anniversary. Ha ha ha, happy anniversary. I wish to you happy, happy anniversary, happy anniversary.
Thank you for listening to the Forgotten News Podcast. You will now be returned back to the present day, and we hope that we can count on you to join us for our next episode.
Like water. You are a raindrop, and drops can be ignored, but with all the raindrops around you, supporting you, buoying you up, you are a storm. You are an ocean. And storms and oceans cannot be ignored. You are not alone. You are an ocean stretching out for the first time in your life in memory of the ocean that overflowed generations ago to overflow the new shorelines which constrict you. You are a raindrop, and a single raindrop is a momentary beat against a window. But you are an ocean, and the oceans drown the shorelines and the houses built on sand. You will be heard. You already are heard. You matter. You are like water. You are a heartbeat. You are a heartbeat pounding out in time. Ba-bump, ba-bump, ba-bump. You are a heartbeat of America, and it pulses with your heartbeat. With all of your voices and with all of your emotions, they, we, surround you. And we support you, even if we are not with you in the body. Go about your day and know that we are with you. With every beat of your heartbeat, know that you matter. We buoy you up. Our heart beats in time with you. Even if you stand out in a crowd of blank, silent faces, know that we stand with you. Ba-bump, ba-bump, ba-bump. And the sound of 100,000 heartbeats is thunder. The sound of 100,000 heartbeats are drums that cannot be ignored. We will be heard. You will be heard. You already are heard. You matter. You are a heartbeat. You are like fire. You are an ember. Though embers are brief and embers can be put out, put enough of us, we embers together, and we are a fire. Fires burn bright. Fires are a beacon of light, of safety. We are a signal to all around, and conflagrations destroy in a forest so that new trees can be born. Different trees, different shapes, different topography, and different geography. Better trees and better topography. Through the process of purifying, you create new life. Better life. Life which unfurls newer, greener leaves, more alive leaves, leaves that were not dried up and sharp to the touch, and which hurt people like us just by existing. Like fire, you will be seen. You already are seen. You matter. You are like fire. You do the right thing. You do the right thing, not because this is easy, but because it is right. It is right to stand up. It is right to make yourself, ourselves, heard. It is right to want to live in a new way. It is right to be a part of making that new way. It is right to stand up to say that we are human, that we are equal, that we are allowed to have our say and have our say be heard and taken into account and to spark change. New change, good change, change that gives us more of a say, more of an equal starting line, less obstacles in our way as we rise. We want to rise up. Not to destroy, but to create. To create new words, new stories, new perspectives, new ways to see the world based on where we came from. New things, new jobs, new businesses, new ways to become greater, better. New places to start from for our younger brothers and sisters, for our sons and daughters. We reject the old ways, and we build the new from and within the ruins of the old. You reject hate. You reject the immaturity of bringing yet more hate into the world. There is already enough. You create new things. You advise. You write, you listen, you perform, you talk, you comfort, you uplift. You already are heard. You already are seen. You matter. You do the right thing. You are like water. You are like a river rising in its banks as more and more rain joins your current. Water erodes rock. Rock over time becomes sand, and sand is washed away. You are like one raindrop among 100,000 raindrops. But every single thing that you do already matters. Every time you have struggled, every time you have beat your hand and your head against something implacable, something that seems like it never changes, it makes a difference. You hold your head high and you walk proud and it matters. You turn your cheek and you forgive, even if you never forget, and it matters. You build up new things, new creations, and it matters. It matters not only to you, but it matters to blank, silent faces. To blank, silent faces who do not know how to speak out. It matters to the old leaves that want to become new leaves. It matters to the forest that grows higher, healthier than before. It matters to the shorelines, to the grains of sand that become raindrops. It matters to the voices that become drumbeats. It matters to the shorelines and the houses built on sand. If they are swept away, they were not worth keeping. You will build new houses with what you do, with what you already do, with what you will do. You are seen, you are heard. You matter. You are like water.